The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.
Welcome to the program. This is Mike Consul, your host. We appreciate your listenership as always. We're going to talk about a subject, an industry, a property type that was supposed to implode during the pandemic. And lo and behold, it did not do so. I'm talking about the hospitality industry. I'm talking about hotels. Hotels were supposed to be done in by Airbnb and the shared economy. And instead, what did we really see? What we saw was that the fundamentals for the hotel industry were the greatest of all time. They couldn't have been better. Greatest fundamentals ever. Then along comes a pandemic. And of course, hotels were supposed to close. Well, they did close temporarily. They were going to be sold off wholesale, repurposed, turned into senior housing, turned into micro apartments, and you name it. But that didn't really happen, I don't think. And I've got a couple of guests here who are going to really give us a better look at what did happen. Our guests are Minta Kay and Teresa Goble. They're with Goodwin, which is a global law firm with offices across the United States, Asia, and Europe. Minta Kay, she co-chairs the firm's real estate industry group. It's been there for more than 28 years. Teresa Goble is also with the real estate industry group and chairs the hospitality and leisure practice. Both of them are steeped in the hotel business and all things lodging. Teresa Goble and Minta Kay, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Nice to be here.
Thank you for having us.
It's good to have you. And, you know, hotels are one of my favorite subjects. I think they're just a really interesting category. You tell me whether I over or understated what happened with the hospitality industry, because it does seem to be roaring back and maybe in a little different form. I don't know, but you do. So why don't you give us a sketch of what really happened during the pandemic to the hotel industry. And that's a jump ball. Whoever would like to lead off.
I'll take that one and turn it to Teresa. But I just got off the Excella back from New York, where I had spent 4 nights unable basically to get a hotel reservation in the parts of the city in which I needed, and stuck where I had to go, where there was vacancy. So if that's any example, the hospitality industry for sure has evidenced its resiliency, which I think it has always done historically, but I just lived it. So Teresa, you probably have more in-depth details around that.
Yes, absolutely, Minta. I think if you judge by the number of deals on my plate right now, especially ones that need to close by year end, the hospitality is definitely roaring. Lots of deals going on. Mike, as you said, there was a steep, steep decline in the spring of 2020. Travel declined from 42% in 2020 from 2019. And we all know why. We couldn't travel. We were told to stay home. International travel and business travel were hardest hit. As you alluded to, people predicted the decline of hotels. People predicted mass foreclosures, distress in the industry. And what happened was a little bit different, a little more nuanced. One thing that happened is there are winners and losers. The winners among hotels were hotels and resort destinations where people could drive. So my local Napa Valley, those hotels did well as people from surrounding areas needed an escape and wanted to get up there. Resorts did well as people wanted the opportunity to see it, you know, travel as much as they could and just be somewhere, you know, kind of isolated from the effects of the pandemic. Longer stay hotels did well as people needed an option to just being at home. What we saw suffer the most was really the city center hotels. You know, like my own San Francisco downtown was has been largely dormant for the past 16 months or so and is now coming back. So it's the hotels and the city centers that we saw really suffer, you know, some occupancies 5-10%, for a sustained period of time. And I think on the investing side, the same was true. Investors were scared to buy hotels in 2020. They didn't know when the industry was going to recover. People were thinking back to 2008, 2009, 2010, where there was a sustained downturn. But what we've seen instead in 2021 is a renewed interest in hotels. We've seen people who haven't been hotel investors before and are allured by the prospects that are available now to really invest and develop hotels. And also, I think what we're seeing in the hotel industry, and we'll probably get into this a little more, is kind of a fresh look at every property. This was kind of a reset for people who have a hotel. Do we go in a different direction? And there's also been some changes in the industry around technology and the like that our hotel owner clients are looking at to make operations better for guests and more efficient from an economic perspective.
What kind of deals are you doing, Teresa? You mentioned that you're doing a lot of deals. I realize you're a lawyer. You're sworn to secrecy, but you can speak in agnostic or generic terms. What kind of deals are on the table?
To be honest, Mike, everything we were doing before. I have several hotel acquisitions that I'm doing for clients where they're buying hotels, some in really all across the U.S., some in big cities, some in smaller areas like Portland, Maine. I'm doing debt deals along with those. Our hotel owners need financing. So it's been really encouraging in that the debt markets have come back and lenders are lending to hotels. I represent a lot of hotel management companies in negotiating long-term management agreements. So we have a lot of those on our plate, and they're kind of split between some new development, but also kind of there's been a repositioning in the industry, as I alluded to, where people, as the pandemic has shaken out, are thinking, do I have the right manager here? Do I want to change direction? So we're seeing kind of that market open up where owners are looking for new management or franchise arrangements to come in. So we see those. We also have clients who are very active in doing joint ventures. So our client might be the money partner. They're looking for a development partner to either develop a hotel or own a hotel together with that they can take advantage of the developer's expertise and asset management. So really, it's all across the gamut that we're seeing.
That's good to hear. Now, you know, in the past when we spoke, Minta, I think you had mentioned a New York City hotel that said, we're closed permanently. We'll never be open again. And then they opened. Is that the truth?
Yes, that's true. New York City passed a law that required the big hotels, to the extent that they had closed permanently or laid off more than 75% of their staff, to commence payment of a $500 a week stipend, if you will, to employees. There's a lot of detail around that, as you can imagine. I'm just going to keep it very high level. And that prompted a number of those hotels to make the choice to reopen. So the Midtown Hilton has reopened, the Hyatt is reopening, the Omni has reopened. And so many of the hotels in New York, you know, are making the choice to do that. And I think there is not just a purely economic decision driving that, but I believe that there is an optimism that's behind that as well. You know, international travel to a large degree is being lifted now. And many of those are destination type hotels for international travelers. So yeah, there has been a real sea change in terms of the way that those investment opportunities and those operators thought about their assets.
So, you know, we had a column in the magazine written by a hotel consultant that was headlined "The Hotel Fire Sale That Never Happened." Hotels were going to be foreclosed on, people thought, or they're going to have to be sold off. The lenders, I'm assuming, showed a lot of forbearance in terms of saying, hey, you owe us money, now pay up. Because the last thing in the world a banker wants to do is have a hotel on his or her hands and have to figure out what am I going to do with this thing? Am I going to just try to flip it in the worst possible market? I mean, was that the long and short of it? Or why did hotels turn out to be far more durable during the most devastating period maybe in hotel history? Why did they turn out to be more durable than anybody had figured?
I will make a brief comment on that. It is because people like to move around. right? People do like to travel when they can do it in a safe fashion. And just like there were predictions, you know, at the global financial crisis time, just like there were predictions more recently that with the wave of debt coming to maturity, all of these crazy things would happen. Well, they have not happened. I will say, though, that there were some attempted foreclosures in New York City on hotels. Some proceeded, some did not. But the hotel industry is a very nimble industry. And that's very important to recognize because it is morphing and it is evolving into something it was not before. And therein, I think, lies the opportunity that many people in the industry see. Hotels are becoming some blurred, you know, situation around residential with some hotel, short-term, long-term, office in the middle, dining in the middle. You know, the definitions have all broken down. And I think that that really makes, you know, these assets very appealing.
I would just add, I think one reason I love working in the hospitality industry is it's a very tight industry. You kind of have the same players who've done this their whole career. And I think what happened in the pandemic as compared to what happened in 2008 to 2010 is the industry really came together. And there was a sense of cooperation in getting through this together. So as you said, you had lenders who didn't want to, you know, they don't want to own hotels. They were more flexible with their borrowers. They, you know, extended term. They let, you know, owners use their capital reserve to pay operating expenses. You know, they forbeared. So there was cooperation on that side. And I think on the other side, you had the management companies and the brands who you know, had these hotels with no revenue. But at the same time, they were flexible with the owners. They relaxed their brand standards. They kind of held off on requiring renovations that otherwise would have been allowed to be made. And they did this across the board. It wasn't, you know, just on an individual hotel basis. So I think it was a real sense of people pulling together and, you know, distinguishing it from 2008 in that the pandemic was no one's fault in the industry. I think in 2008, there was a sense people took on too much leverage and got themselves into that position. I think that in the pandemic, people realized, here we are, we need to get out, and to get out, we need to work together.
You know, I like staying at hotels. I like staying at Airbnbs. And when I have tried to book a room or booked a room recently at hotels, they do not look like they're working their way back to full prices. They not only seem full price, they seem like they're high priced right now. Is that the case? I mean, is that what you're seeing out there, that they are not only able to charge what they used to charge? Because initially, and I even heard this from a hotelier, that, well, we're going to have to work our way back to the full room price, but it doesn't seem like that's the case.
It's really interesting. That's a great question, because I think what happened in 2008, 2010, the reaction to the downturn was cut price. We just need to get heads in beds. Let's cut our room rate. And I think people learned that was a mistake, because once you get lower the room rate, it's hard to get it back up. So I think there were some people in 2008, 2010 who bucked that trend, and they were more successful. So I think the industry learned its lesson this time. And there definitely was discounting, you know, compared to normal times. But I think there was a real effort to maintain rate at the level that it had been before, just so people weren't clawing their way all up from the bottom before. And I think, too, part of what you're seeing now is pent-up demand. As Minta said, people want to move. People haven't been able to move. So now hotels are fully booked. They're able to get the rate. I mean, there's some hotels, you know, in our own Napa Valley where one night is a mortgage payment for some people, right? And that they're able to command that rate because the demand is there.
What about business travel? There's been a lot of talk that the fact that we've been working virtually and we've seen how much better and effective video conferencing is, whether using Zoom or Skype or what have you, that there's an awful lot of business travel in the past, especially these one-day trips where you kind of get burned out when you're just traveling for a day. You go have a one-hour meeting and then you're back at the office. Is business travel expected to come back fully? Or is the idea that business travel, you know, the critical stuff's going to still be there? And I'm asking the right people, I think, because you're an international law firm. And I mm-hmm. suspect you guys were doing a lot of travel. And is it going to continue that way? Or is it going to be that, hey, a lot of this stuff can be done virtually?
I think business travel will just be smarter. I think some of it is necessary in an asset class where a hardscape is important, the built environment is important. People will go to see it if they are thinking about making investments or transacting. So I think in H&L, just specifically, you will start to, you will see again the need for people traveling, you know, on the ground. The same will be true across the real estate industry as a whole. If you zoom way up, you know, to 30,000 feet and you look at the economy, it's my personal belief that travel will start back up, but it won't be that unnecessary travel, you know, a 24-hour segment for a one-hour or two-hour meeting. I think that will calm itself. And there will be technologies, there are technologies that will only improve, that will obviate the need for as much of that. But I do believe that business travel will resume in a sane way.
You know, we just held one of our events. Business events are starting up again. And boy, you can really tell people were just dying to get back together in a room and have a drink in their hand and network and meet one another and be able to get business done on a level that you can't do virtually. There's so many cues you don't pick up on when you're dealing with somebody on a computer screen versus when you're in person. Even physical gestures that you know that somebody's about to start speaking, so you give them the space to do that instead of talking over one another. So there's definitely an appetite and a hunger there. That of course, doesn't mean that all business travel is going to come back. But by contrast, what about leisure tourism? Because it seems, it certainly was, and it seems that it still is poised for a surge, not only because of pent-up demand and frustration, but when you look at the rising middle classes around the world, particularly in Asia, and the desire to travel, now having disposable income and the ability to travel, it would seem that the hotel industry has got this wave of prosperity rolling towards it.
I would agree with that. It's the pent-up demand, but I think going back to what you said before about 2019, the industry was at its height then, and there was a lot of demand even then. And I think especially as you know, we just become more global and global every year, that people do want to travel. And I think, you know, being remote and being at home, you know, has had an interesting effect, right? I mean, people want to get out, but they're also able to kind of live in different places now, but that then creates the appetite to travel other places. So I think you're right. It is kind of greenfields out there in terms of getting people on the road and traveling. And, you know, I think a lot of us, even in our personal lives, right, we have a list of places we've been wanting to go, and now we're free to be able to go. And so I think hotels are staffing up and bracing themselves, you know, for that surge of people to come. And I think it's what we're well into it already, but it certainly will continue.
I also think, Mike, it's interesting to watch the nature around the types of assets that people want to travel to. I think that's broadening. And as I said before, I think that there is a real evolution away from just the standard old bricks and mortar hotel, four walls, it is this and nothing else, to a much more flexible experiential opportunity. And I think the hospitality and leisure, the travel, you know, whatever you want to call that space, and we debated internally a lot, but whatever you want to call that, is going to create very innovative ways to continue to attract people who want to spend time away from, you know, their normal daily diet, if you will. And the companies and the groups, the firms, the technology companies who can do that more effectively are going to be the ones that I think will take us into the next era of hospitality. And right now there are a lot who are working in, you know, hospitality residential with all different kinds of blends in one residential building of long-term apartments, service departments, furnished departments, unfurnished, unserviced, short-term, long-term. Yeah, you know, I think that kind of thinking was going to be very important to enable travelers and digital nomads and regular old nomads, you know, who want to do things differently to be able to get their needs met in the travel.
Well, and I want, yes, Yes. And I'm an augmented reality. I want to walk into a hotel and feel like I'm on the astral plane, for crying out loud. Now, I jest, but I do want to talk about technology. Are you seeing new technologies? I can see operationally hotels are changing how they operate. For instance, they're not sending their service workers in your room every day to make your bed or change the towels or what have you. And to me, that's fine because most of my hotel stays are going to be just a couple, three nights, and I'm set, and I really don't want anybody coming in the room anyway. But they've gotten more touchless. They've lowered the amount of interaction with the rooms, keeping their distance from the customers. Are there any technologies that are being deployed right now, or horizon technologies that you would expect to be integrated into hotels that are going to make some kind of appreciable changes, maybe even air filtration systems that are more higher grade?
Absolutely. It is kind of remarkable if you think about it, even pre-pandemic 2019, that given we all carry this little phone around in our hands all the time, there really wasn't widespread availability of remote check-in to hotels, right? Like the technology was there to do it. So I think one thing the pandemic has done is really accelerated the introduction of technology into hotels. So the remote check-in is one thing that we're seeing more and more of, and I think all hotel companies are on that train to make that something available to all guests. The other thing we're seeing is apps, where brands have apps that you can use, and you can order room service. You could get all kinds of different things from your app. iPods in the room, similar kind of theories. I think to your point, health and safety there'll be advances in air filtration and things like that. But I think one thing we do keep in mind in the industry, is especially on the luxury end, is that luxury hotels create a relationship with their guest. And that's what keeps guests coming back, is that relationship. It's not necessarily the four walls of the building. It's feeling welcome and feeling like your needs are being met. And so what we have to balance in the luxury sector is giving people the technology they want, but also really keeping that personal touch with the guest, where you have that relationship so the guest will be loyal to your brand, to your hotel, as opposed to just connecting virtually and where they can do that, in any property at all. So I think we will see a lot of these advances in technology, but there also will be an emphasis on the higher end segments of keeping that personal touch with the guest.
I agree with that completely. I also think it's interesting to watch what's going to happen with respect to the embracing of the experiential nature of one's time in a place outside their home. And so I think the technology around the guest experience, as Teresa alluded to, is going to expand phenomenally and really take on a new life of its own. I think increased robotics will be prevalent. I think they will be front-facing with certain types of assets and back-facing with others, depending on the type of brand or the type of asset that is involved. So I think you're going to see a lot more growth in that space. I will also say that I think in terms of new construction, the focus on more sustainable products and construction systems, construction delivery, and waste management will become increasingly important, particularly as some of the younger generations really start to make choices about where they stay and how they stay, based on metrics that matter to them, that include, diminishing the impacts of climate change and other such things.
Mm-hmm. Kind of the whole ESG thing being an overlay with a hotel's operation, even the construction, as you're saying, Minta. So for all these wonderful things we've said about hotels, how good things have actually gone compared to what we thought, and what a great future they have. Everybody talks about the four major property types, not the five. The four does not include hotels. We've got retail, office, residential, and industrial, but not hotel. And a lot of people have institutional investors and non-institutional investors have real estate portfolios that have no hospitality presence. Why is that?
there's a distinction that's drawn between hotels, hospitality, and the rest of the real estate asset classes that you discussed, which is that hotels are operating businesses. So there's a layer of complexity to owning hotels that is not present in owning those other kinds of assets from an ownership perspective. So as you know, you go into a hotel, there's employees, there's, you know, lots of things going on. Hotels are transaction intensive, right? Thousands of transactions a day that have to be kind of cataloged and analyzed. And, you know, in the fortunes of hotels too, as we've talked about, they're definitely very cyclical in a way that some of those other asset classes aren't. So I think hotels are just seen as unique. And I think that's among investors, it's among lenders as well, you know, in terms of what their profile is for the kinds of assets they're willing to underwrite. So I think it's really those unique aspects of hotels being an operating business that sets them apart from the other types of assets.
The pricing is so dynamic with hotels. I think that's one of the big assets that they have. They can change not only day to day, but hour to hour. It's like, hey, we have remnant space. The price just went down because we'd rather get some cash and put some heads on pillows than just leave that remnant space empty and not get any cash for it at all. So it seems that it's just where a lease for an apartment, you have to wait a year. A lease for unless you put cost escalators in the lease for say an office, you're going to end up waiting 5 or 7 or 10 years before you can jack up that rent or just respond to the market or lower the rent for that matter. Well, actually any empty space, you could always lower that to try to fill it. But what about the dynamic pricing? And I guess there's a different dynamic pricing. There are, I guess, algorithms that truly do dynamic pricing. But what I'm talking about is really pricing flexibility where a hotel can just decide, let's raise the price because the demand calls for it. Let's lower the price on just this remnant space at least.
I think that's a big part of it as well. I think it's the idea that, you know, you're kind of minute for minute assessing, you know, what your pricing is going to be in your booking rooms for today, your booking rooms from a year from now. So it's kind of all those elements together where the revenue management has gotten incredibly sophisticated to try to be able to do that in a way that maximizes the overall what we call RevPAR, which is revenue per available room. So we don't want to maximize price alone. We don't want to maximize occupancy alone. We want to maximize the blend of the two of those, which goes back to what we were talking about earlier about keeping rate high. But it's incredibly transaction intensive and as you alluded to, changes every day, every hour, even almost like an airline.
Yeah, I would say, Mike, in reverting back to a comment you made a bit earlier, you know, the four main asset classes you alluded to are really not the four main asset classes anymore. And when you start to look at where the investment managers with the large fund sizes are investing in, they're moving out of the four big classes. They're moving into manufactured housing. They're moving into single family residential. They're moving into buying retail and reconfiguring it. You know, so a lot of the money is moving into different opportunities that require patience in investing. And some of that is the case with hospitality, but people see it because they can look ahead 2 years and they can see where trends are going to go and how people's behaviors will change, you know, coming out of the pandemic otherwise. And they can determine that there's a tremendous amount of value to be had out of a particular asset class. And I think that's what you see in hospitality. There is looking forward value that people anticipate.
Interesting. So let's look forward and just in summarizing and wrapping up this podcast. And I'll start with you, Teresa, just as you look down the road, 3-5 years, where do you expect the hotel industry to be?
Barring a recession in the overall economy, because obviously it's the hotel industry is very sensitive to economic changes, as we've discussed, I think the hotel industry is going to be even farther along than it is now in terms of technology and also in terms of demand. And to Minta's point, I think it's going to morph into, you know, you're not going to have that many just hotels. You're going to have hotels that have other components, whether it be adjacent residential or whether it just be, you know, restaurants that serve the whole neighborhood and not just the guests of the hotel. but they're going to become, they're going to be part of the neighborhood and part of the landscape in a city that'll offer many things to many different people in a way that they don't today. So we can look at them kind of as more of an integrated offering to the community, as opposed to just offering a bed to put your head down at night.
Interesting. Minta, what do you think?
I share that view. I'm quite excited about this space. Maybe I'm biased because I love to travel. We'll travel anytime, anywhere, when permitted by law and safety and my family's rules about how much exposure I can take. I find the looking forward opportunity in this space to be extraordinarily powerful. I think that it's going to become the case that what we see now is really not what's going to be there going forward. And I think we're going to have more holistic experiential opportunities for people when they travel. I think there will still remain urban infill hotels, right? We all need them when we have to fly in and out of a city to do something. But I think even with that, there's going to be a much more of an opportunity to find working space in a hotel, to find different use spaces in a hotel, to dine in a room that's not just room service, but that's designated to dining, for example. We've seen that happen. You know, to find other ways that allow the hoteliers to drive revenue, but that actually service a need for their clientele. So I'm very optimistic and looking very much forward to, you know, where this industry goes, because what Teresa and I see right now is quick innovation, wonderful flexibility, you know, trying to take risks and, you know, do experiments. Some will work, some won't. But we see the industry really trying to navigate, you know, the changing mores in our society right now and the changing demands of our generations.
Our guests have been Minta Kay and Teresa Goebel. They are business attorneys at Goodwin, an international law firm. They're deep into the hospitality business, among some other categories. Ladies, thank you for taking the time and coming on the program.
Thank you.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.